Well, it's all You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150 AM, and we have a great show today, as always. First, I'd like to say hi to Eric, our booth engineer and program coordinator. Hi, Eric.
Hey, good afternoon, Joey.
Good afternoon. What a lovely day to take your dog for a walk, huh?
Not bad. Probably wouldn't do too much else outside today. It's cold and foggy and cloudy. But a great day, nonetheless, to take your dog for a walk.
The point being that even if it's not a perfect sunny day, still a good day to take your dog out, get some exercise. And, you know, once you're out there and you get warmed up, it's not that bad.
Absolutely. And you can have a cup of hot chocolate when you get home, and the dog can have a bowl of water.
Warm goat's milk, perhaps.
Or Answers goat milk. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, we've got a very important show today. With us today is Dr. Frank McMillan with Best Friends Animal Society, and we're talking about puppy mill survivors or puppy mill breeding dogs specifically. So let's start talking with Dr. Frank McMillan. Hi, Dr. Frank.
Hi, Julie. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks so much for being with us today. I've got the notification about the work that you've been doing, and it sounds like you've just completed research on a very important study.
Yeah, what we did when I came to Best Friends here about 4 years ago, I started asking myself some questions that we had suspected, and that is the dogs that get out of puppy mills, and I guess I should back up and explain the issue of puppy mills themselves.
Yes.
There are, as most people are aware, there's large breeding facilities for dogs. They're mainly in the Midwest, but they're pretty much all over the world, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where a lot of dogs, and the lot is not real well defined, but usually anywhere from dozens to thousands of dogs are kept confined in small enclosures, cages, and small runs for their entire breeding life. And all they do is reproduce and produce puppies that are then shipped off and trucked to, at least from all the United States breeding facilities, to all North American pet stores. And it's thought that the pet stores' supply of puppies is about 99% from these large breeding facilities that we call puppy mills. Now, of course, the people running these places don't call themselves puppy mills, because it is a negative term. But anyway, so the dogs spend their entire life there, and the puppies get out early. They don't get out unscathed, which is the point of our next study that we just finished and submitted for publication. But the ones that do get out as adults, they get out in a few ways. Sometimes the puppy mills are closed down for legal reasons. Others is that the puppy mill operators decide to get out of the business on their own. Others decide, I'm not going to breed this breed anymore. I'm going to switch over. So I want to sell off or give away all the dogs I have of this breed.
Mm-hmm.
In one way or another, they will often, not often enough, but often get out and be a rescue group will help place them in homes, in adoptive homes. And we had known for some time that they had shown unusual behavior and had difficulties in some cases. So we decided to undertake a study and look at exactly what is the harm done psychologically to these dogs, and showing it when they get out. And what we and I teamed up, by the way, with a couple of professor buddy colleagues of mine at the University of Pennsylvania, and we solicited people that had adopted these dogs. We ended up having about 1,169 dogs in the study, and what we found is, as a group, now I should point out that just like people coming back from warfare or something like that, some look perfectly fine and are fine. Others are incredibly scarred, and that's what we found in this group of dogs, is that across the board, as a group, their fear levels were sky high. They were just living in fear of everything from people to events like noises and movements to interestingly enough, other dogs. They were more fearful of other dogs than typical pet dogs are. And that the reason I say it's unusual is that they're kept in confinement almost always in groups. So you expect them to be highly socialized. But what appears to be happening is that by being confined and literally not having any escape when things get tense or conflict develops, that they come out more fearful of other dogs than your typical dogs do. So they come out with that and many other things, like they're not well house trained for obvious reasons. They never had to hold it. They go on this wire floor. And they come out with quite a few difficulties that very often they'll overcome, very often they'll partially overcome, and some of them will struggle long term, again, just like psychologically traumatized people do. But having said all that, let me also point out that we did a follow-up study, which isn't part of the published study, to look at how people that adopted these dogs perceive their experience of having adopted them. And what we found was that when we asked how satisfied are you with having adopted this dog with the problems you've encountered, we found a 92% said extremely satisfied, another 7% said moderately, only 1% said not satisfied. And then when we asked a similar question, would you do it again if you had the opportunity to adopt a puppy mill dog, considering all the problems? And that was a 95% yes. So the rewards of adopting these dogs can be huge, but you do have to have a special mindset to take in a dog and work with them with their problems. Yeah. It's not for everybody.
And let me make a distinction here, because there's a lot of a lot of information that you've covered. The distinction, first of all, between a puppy from a puppy mill, what we're talking about is the adult, often adult dogs that have been the breeder dogs at puppy mills. So these are not the puppies that you find in pet stores. And we've done shows about this topic as well, specifically, the challenges that people can find adopting a puppy from a puppy mill. We're talking about the adult dogs that have basically been imprisoned in these often very large scale facilities. And I want to paint the picture, Dr. Frank, a little bit more about what these conditions are actually like, and that a lot of, and I think one of the things in your study is that you found that these impacts, you found even in puppy mills that are, you know, USDA approved or whatever, which to me doesn't mean much, that these dogs actually live in cages and a lot of the times have never even ever in their life walked on grass. They don't have clean water. Their food is moldy. They have no interaction with people, or the interaction that they have with humans is not enjoyable. They don't have their medical needs met. They are just being used as reproductive vessels to mass produce puppies to feed the pet stores, and it's just not okay, especially considering that 4 million dogs a year are euthanized in the shelter systems because they have nowhere to go.
Yeah, Julie, thanks for making the distinction. It is important to know that the study we just published was on the breeding dogs that get rescued out of the puppy mills. And as I mentioned, we just finished the study of dogs that have been sold through pet stores, comparing them to non-pet store dogs. Mm-hmm. And it's two different groups, but they do show in some cases some similar problems. But yeah, you're right about the conditions in the mills. The puppy mills have a variable quality in terms of how well kept the animals are, whether they do have clean water. Some are disgusting and don't have water at all, much less moldy. Others are kept well watered and even, for that matter, well fed. The problem is that all USDA regulations and every state regulation, for which only 33 states have their own state regulations, they have never been written to the current knowledge that we have about emotional needs in dogs, mm-hmm. and therefore meeting every single requirement. And when pet stores brag about this is a USDA licensed and inspected, blah, blah, blah. First of all, last year a report came out and said how poor the inspections
right.
are when they're done.
Right.
But even when they're done perfectly, it's not enough. The dogs are still deprived of human companionship, which domesticated dogs are thriving for emotionally. They have a strong emotional need, and of course they suffer without that. So even those shiny, sparkly, clean breeding facilities still psychologically damage the dogs.
Well, and why do we need mass production of dogs anyway when overpopulation is probably one of the biggest problems that we face when we talk about dogs in society? I mean, they just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously because they make money, which is why they exist, but they just shouldn't exist in the first place. So I don't even ideally want to be having a conversation about regulations. I just want
right.
them to be gone.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So we've, you know, I'm definitely interested to hear more about the specifics in what you did find in your study when we're talking about the psychological trauma that these dogs show as a result of this life as a puppy mill breeding dog. So we're going to take a quick break, Dr. Frank, but we're going to come back and talk more about the results of your study.
Okay.
So we're talking today with Dr. Frank McMillan with Best Friends Animal Society. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes on Alternative Talk 1150.
Do you have an injury, old or new, that won't heal? Are you fighting a cold or illness you can't kick? Do you feel like you've tried everything and are still struggling to find wellness and balance in your physical health? Have you been unimpressed with acupuncture in the past? For over a decade, Robert Meduzia has been making a difference for people who thought they had exhausted their options. Don't settle for pain and illness. Call 425-828-6190. That's 425-828-6190. Again, 425-828-6190. The Acupuncture and Sports Clinic of Kirkland. Heal faster, play longer.
For more than 25 years, All the Best Pet Care has been helping people choose the best foods, treats, and toys for their dogs and cats. They are a locally owned family business bringing about little miracles every day by following the Mother Nature model of nutrition. Stop by to meet their adoption cats, schedule an anesthesia-free dental cleaning, or bring your dog to the toy testing area. Visit their new store in Edmonds next to the PCC and their expanded Redmond store in the Whole Foods Plaza. To learn more, go to allthebestpetcare.com. or follow them on Facebook.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Designing Health, makers of Missing Link, we cover the world of living successfully with your animal friends. This week, it's a Martha and Robin Sunday. Gifted mystic Robin Alexis will join me for the show. Together, we'll tune in to different animal situations around the world to find out what the animals have to say, and we'll find out what we can do to help. So, join us for Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Your dog has digestive upset.
You want answers.
Your dog has itchy skin.
You want answers.
Your dog has kidney disease.
You want answers.
Your dog is overweight.
You want answers. Go to AnswersPetFood.com to find the answers as to why you want to feed Answers Pet Food to your dog with these issues. Answers Pet Food. If you have questions, we give you answers.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes, your host of The Dog Talk Show and owner of Sensitive Dog, Dog Training and Behavior. Invisible Fence Northwest uses a balanced, gentle approach to help dogs learn their boundaries. I've seen it firsthand. They work with each person and pet as an individual and teach in a way that's fun and respectful. Your dog quickly learns it has freedom and fair boundaries, so is safe, happy, and secure. Isn't that what we all want for our dogs? Save $100 when you visit InvisibleFenceNW.com or call 800-800-FENCE and tell them you're a Dog Talk Show fan. They're there for the life of your pet.
Radio for your body, mind, and spirit. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Rescue me, rescue me.
Welcome back to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150 AM. The Dog Show is brought to you in part by Invisible Fence Northwest. Invisible Fence for the life of your pet. Check out InvisibleFenceNW.com to learn about their indoor and outdoor solutions for both dogs and cats. The Dog Show is also brought to you in part by All the Best Pet Care, all the best food, treats, and toys for your dog and cat. You can find them online at allthebestpetcare.com to see where all of their 9 locations are around Western Washington. And we're back today talking with Dr. Frank McMillan with Best Friends Animal Society about a study that was just recently published, research that they did. Dr. Frank McMillan was the lead researcher of this study, where they studied a large group of breeding dogs from puppy mills and studied actually the psychological harm that these animals show. So welcome back, Dr. Frank.
Thank you, Julie.
So tell us, so you had a sample of about more than 1,100 dogs, and you found these dogs. So were these dogs that were... had been adopted, and so you were able to contact the humans of these dogs who had adopted these breeding dogs?
Right. The way we did that is we contacted all the groups that we are aware of that handle the placement of dogs that had come out of puppy mills, mm-hmm. and then we asked them to help us with the study and send out a notification of the study to all the people they had adopted puppy mill dogs to. And so those are the people that ultimately emailed me, and I gave them the link to the questionnaire that we used, and that's how we got all the responses.
Okay. And so tell us a little bit more in detail about what you actually found in your study and in your research, and how these results compare to, you know, your average dog or a more quote-unquote normal dog.
Sure. In addition to the things I mentioned already, the fear levels, we found actually that aggression levels were decreased. Now, that sounds on the surface like a good thing, but the problem is that it appears that their fear, the aggression is decreased because they're so overwhelmed by the fear. They don't just react like a normal dog of striking out to bite or something like that. So it's certainly good that they don't have higher aggression levels, but it's based on a bad reason for being that way.
Like they're kind of shut down or
that's
disassociated,
correct.
Or something?
Right. They're so withdrawn.
Yeah.
A normal dog will have a fight or flight response.
Right.
These dogs are, their fight response is minuscule and their flight is very high, and so they're pretty much overwhelmed by it. Now, another interesting thing we found is that they're very sensitive to being touched, and this means just simply being touched, but more often people notice it when they try to hold, hug, pick up the dogs. And what's happened there, of course, is they've had no experience with that. So although we judge that as a very comforting move, just as our part of our nature, it's an absolute terror for them. And again, we're not talking everyone, but many of them, when they come out of the rescued puppy mill and people try to just love them to death, it's really, really scary because they have never had that happen. And so a lot of these dogs will be very fearful of being touched, picked up, or held, and a lot of them will overcome it. But some will carry on that for even a lifetime to where they just don't want to be picked up, and people, you know, come to accept that. They know they've been through a very hard time.
Yeah.
We also found that a lot of them will show odd mental functions, the most dramatic being that very often they will just stare off into space and just have this absolute blank, vacant look on their face. And it's not constant, but it's frequent. And of course, you don't see that in normal dogs. And it's just something that people tend to relate a lot to autism. They use that analogy a lot just for the fact that there's clearly something inside that mind, but it's not perceiving or interacting the way it normally would. So
yeah.
That's something that's really troubling.
Yeah.
we found that a lot of them won't play. And that's no surprise because they don't get to play in the puppy mills. They're never given toys. They're never given enrichment. You yourself mentioned they've never been on grass. And so when they're put on grass, as I'm sure you've seen, they act like they're on some kind of weird broken glass or icy thing, to where they keep picking up their paws, and it takes them quite a while to even get used to just grass, which we take for granted. That's right. What dogs want to be on. So a lot of those things, and we found that about half of them show a preference based on the sex of the person who's interacting with them. And of that half, 90% of those like women much more than men. Some are very afraid of men, and about 10% of that half show a preference towards men and are more afraid of women. And these are all really helpful things for when we're placing the animals, because now we can give them absolute numbers on the likelihood that this dog will do this, that, or the other. And that way we won't get a call in 6 months and say, this is a total failure. My dog won't, for example, I didn't mention this, but very often they won't make eye contact. So if people perceive that as rejection, then they're going to look at the whole thing as failing, when in fact these dogs literally are wired differently. You can't expect all the interactions to be normal interactions, and therefore it may not be a failed adoption. It's just that that particular dog is having that particular struggle. So we've learned a lot on how we can prepare people ahead of time of what they might see and what the chances of overcoming that will be, and by all means the best ways to help them do that.
Yeah, and this is an important thing to, you know, speak of, not just in, I mean, it brings up an important point, and I've talked about this before, for people who are looking not necessarily for a puppy mill rescue, a breeding dog, but just any sort of puppy, because the problems that you've seen in your research are a result of the like you said, the wiring. And this is because, I mean, I'm assuming that most of these breeding dogs are sort of born into the puppy mill environment. So this isn't this isn't a dog that has come from, you know, a good breeder who has sold their, you know, one of their top dogs to be a puppy mill breeding dog. I mean, these are dogs that are bred within the system. And right. So we're talking about puppies that are born into this sort of like warehouse, farm factory type setting, that never leave a cage, that never have contact with a person, that are never touched, and if they are, potentially not handled well by a human.
Right.
I mean, I just want to point out the sort of severity, and the, really for people to get what is actually happening to these dogs from babies. I mean, they're kept in such horrible conditions. They're raised in this way, and it's actually impacted how they are wired. This isn't something that an adult dog goes through a traumatic experience. This is like from birth. They're experiencing this environment, and that's why it's so hard for these dogs to get over it, or why it takes so long. Like you said, they've never walked on grass. Their brain has never actually experienced that scent. Like the paws have never felt that sense. The brain has never processed that information ever. So they're not wired.
Sadly, they very often have never walked on a flat, solid floor, period.
Right.
They do this little dance to try to keep their feet from slipping through the wiring. And when they get on just a simple, solid floor in a household, that will scare them.
Yeah. When you talk about, you mentioned before about this sort of, that you saw a lower occurrence of aggression, and that may sound like a good thing, but it's actually because the dogs are just sort of so checked out. And I worked with a puppy mill rescue dog. I was telling you off air about her briefly. She was a former puppy mill breeder, and these, you know, lovely couple, you know, just angels, such sweet, patient people, adopted this dog. They already had a dog that they didn't get from a puppy mill. He was an older male corgi who was very confident, and they adopted this dog. She was probably five or six. I think she was a Bichon, and she just sat on the couch. She had a blanket on the couch, and she stayed there all day and all night. And unless they put her out, she would follow this other dog around. She sort of showed some interest in connecting with the other dog, but had no even ability to relate to the people. And, you know, they would let her out to go to the bathroom. She would eat, but the level of her functioning was so minimal. And she, you know, they're just kind of checked out. And they had a heck of a time even getting her to learn how to walk around the neighborhood. I mean, we're talking about, you know, teaching a dog how to walk on a leash. I mean, this dog, like you said, has never walked on solid surface before, likely. So, you know, it's something that we take so for granted.
Well, yeah, and the thing about moving a dog from a puppy mill into a home is that there's not one thing in that house that they're familiar with. They don't know. They've never seen furniture, carpeting, a clear glass window. That's completely weird to them. A ceiling fan scares them out of their wits. They are in an absolute foreign world, and we don't really quite get that because none of us have ever been through that.
Yeah.
But it is horrifying, and again, a lot of them will adapt and come along quite well, but others do have the struggle, and they just don't deserve that.
Yeah. So when we come back from break, again, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Dr. Frank McMillan with Best Friends Animal Society, and they've just recently published a study that they did conducting research on dogs who were former breeding dogs in puppy mills. And puppy mills are these sort of large, oftentimes large-scale commercial breeding operations where the dogs are just kept in cages and, you know, in worst cases have dirty water. If water at all, the food they have is moldy. If they have food at all, they're not getting cared for. They're sick and sometimes mistreated by the people who are, you know, there. So this is a study that was just released, and it was done. Dr. Frank McMillan was the lead researcher on this study, and it was conducted through Best Friends Animal Society. So we're going to be talking more with Dr. Frank when we come back from break. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes on Alternative Talk 1150.
Family-owned since 1975, Dr. Don's Automotive has been awarded Best Auto Repair from Seattle Magazine, Seattle Weekly, and Ballard News Tribune. Dr. Don's Automotive offers a free 35-point inspection. It's winterization time. Remember to have your coolant, tires, brakes, hoses, and belts checked to keep you and your dog safe this winter. Visit drdonsautomotive.com for more information or call 206-782-6303 to schedule an appointment. Mention this ad for 5% off parts and labor. Dr. Don's Automotive, expert auto repair and service with the honesty of a dog lover that you can trust.
Let Hot Portraiture paint your dog in a stylish, abstract, realistic style. Artist Jennifer Bloom captures the personality of any canine, big or small, mutt or purebred. You can even include yourself in the painting, and you're sure to love the end result. To find out more, visit hotportraiture.net. That's H-A-U-T-E, portraiture.net. Or call Jennifer at 206-661-4538.
Do you know there is an insurance company that offers great rates, quality service, and cares about your furry companions? Progressive will help cover the cost of your vet bills if you and your pet are involved in an accident. Call the good guys at Eastside Insurance, who represent Progressive Insurance and other fine companies. Contact Tom or Chuck at e-z-insurance.com for a free quote, or call 877-817-4103. Eastside Insurance, where you and your pet can rest insured.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist. www.sensitivedog.com.
Alternative Talk 1150 is on the interwebs. Dial us up at 1150kknw.com.
Welcome back to the Dog Show with Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150 AM. And we are back talking with Dr. Frank McMillan, who is the lead researcher of a study that was just published recently, done through Best Friends Animal Society, studying the psychological trauma that puppy mill breeding dogs show. And these are dogs that are, we were talking about what exactly puppy mills are and that they're these sort of large-scale sort of factory farming of dogs. So these commercial breeding operations where the dogs are kept in small cages with very little space, with often with other dogs, you know, worst case scenario, dirty water or no water at all, moldy food, you know, they're not taken care of, their veterinary needs not taken care of, etc. So Dr. Frank McMillan is the lead researcher of the study and a director of well-being studies for Best Friends. And so, Dr. Frank, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Julie.
And so you were able to connect over 1,100 dogs, or connect with the people who have adopted over 1,100 dogs formerly used for breeding in puppy mills, and you were able to get some information from them about how these dogs are behaving and sort of what these people are noticing from these dogs now that they've been taken out of the puppy mill environment and are in, you know, loving homes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you talked about the, you know, very, very high levels of fear, the low levels of aggression, but that not necessarily being a good thing, because the reason is because the dogs are just so shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're just not even... they're so overwhelmed by their environment that they're just not even participating enough to experience fight or flight. They're just kind of frozen. And that's what I saw with the dog that I worked with several years ago that I can recall the most clearly. She was about five or six, and she just laid on the couch and didn't move all,
right,
you know, day after day after day after day, just didn't participate in life. What did you, now you were able to get some information in this study, and you have another study coming out that I'm looking forward to hearing about as well, which is actually done with the puppies who are adopted from puppy mills. Is that right?
Well, yes, although we can't necessarily in the study claim they came from puppy mills. What we studied was dogs that were bought through pet stores, which just statistically is a near certainty that they came from a puppy mill originally.
Was it 99%, you said?
Well, yeah, it's just a hard number to nail down because you can't study it. People don't label themselves puppy mills. Pet stores will claim they don't buy from puppy mills. So it's a little sticky. But we know that pet stores, by requiring literally millions of dogs a year, have to be getting them from the large-scale breeders. We also know that small-scale breeders that care about their puppies do not sell them through pet stores.
No.
So you add up all those things, and you come up with only one conclusion, and that is pet store puppies come from puppy mills until proven otherwise.
Right. So you were able to get some information in this study that's been published, which is about the psychological trauma that these breeding dogs show. Now, are these, what was the ratio of male to female dogs in this study?
We had about 60. 65, I forget the exact number, 65% females, which is very consistent with the fact that females are the overwhelming numbers in puppy mills. In fact, I was a little surprised that we had as many males as we did.
Yeah.
But yeah, females far outweigh males in terms of numbers.
Okay. And did you notice any difference in the results from the males versus female dogs?
No.
Okay.
No, we didn't.
Interesting. So what, you were able to get some information from the people who are now living with these dogs and working to rehabilitate them, which I think is just, you know, the job of an angel. What did you find people said seemed to work, you know, and what didn't work in trying to make these dogs more comfortable or to sort of bring them out into the world?
Right. What we did on the follow-up questionnaire is we asked them, of all the things you've tried, what was the most effective in helping your dog overcome his emotional difficulties? The follow-up question was, of all the things you tried, what was the least effective? And then a third question was, of all the things you tried, did anything cause harm and cause a setback? And what we found on the most effective, the number one thing by far was being patient, not pushing, letting them go at their own pace. There's just no way you can avoid that. If you try to push them, they just don't have the mental capabilities to be pushed. So they'll either not react at all or shut down even more. Now that's not really something that I regard as doing, meaning that if somebody said, what do I do with my dog?
Right, it's, nothing.
Being patient is not doing. The one thing, though, by far and away is the best thing to do is to have another dog or more in the house, and the reason is multiple. One is the dog that you take in can model their behavior after the dogs that you have. A lot of people told us that their dog learned how to play by working with the other dogs where they wouldn't respond to the person right off the bat. The modeling, the other thing that they see is they see how the other dogs react to humans, and they pick up on the fact that the humans are not something to be feared. And
right.
So they break through a lot faster that way. And then the one thing that's sort of my hypothetical, but I'm sure it's an activity, or I'm sure it goes on, and that is when you take a dog like this on in one-on-one with no other dogs, the pressure on that dog on that one-on-one interaction with the human that's always talking to them, always addressing them, is too intense.
Yeah.
But if it's diffused out among all the dogs, it's just like the child in the classroom. If you're by yourself, it's like terrifying.
Right.
But if you're with all the other pupils, it's a lot easier. There's no pressure.
Yeah.
And so that's what's almost certainly happening here, is they don't have the pressure. And we also know, and you may know this, Julie, that we used to think the best place to put these dogs was in households that were quiet with no other dogs. But we found that's the worst thing. You want to have them in with other dogs. Now, of course, we're talking friendly dogs, compatible dogs.
Right.
But the point is that is just by far and away the most effective thing to help these dogs overcome their emotional troubles.
Did you have any of your participants who gave you information? I mean, what sort of stands out to me is that, like what you just said, if having another dog basically as a role model for these dogs to kind of relate to, you know, that dog is a dog that you would want to basically clone if you could, you know, that this is a dog that doesn't have trouble. Did you have any participants who had more than one puppy mill breeding adopt? I mean, it seems like the worst thing that you could do is have multiple dogs all from the same situation so that they're just feeding off each other.
Now, that's a very good point, because whenever you're trying to work with psychological trauma and emotional problems, if they do, if they can retreat with each other in their own world, that's harder for them to advance from. That, and that's a very good point. But in answer to your question, there are a lot of people who have more than one. And in fact, we found out a lot of that when we asked on the second questionnaire, would you adopt another puppy mill dog? A lot of people answered, we already already have. And so the point is that you're right. If you have puppy mill dogs with puppy mill dogs, your chances for overcoming are not good because they see the other dogs being fearful of people too.
Right.
So you need the model that is completely confident and comfortable with people to show that people are not a threat.
Mm-hmm. So what? So you had some other statistics. What didn't work and what caused harm?
Well, and what's interesting here is there's an overlap. What we found, just to give you an example, a lot of people mentioned that the most effective thing they did was petting, touching, and holding their dog. And yet, on the second question of what was the least effective, a lot of people will also rate that high. Not the same people, of course, but different people. So we found that, and also socializing the dog. A lot of people told us that taking them to dog parks or sitting out in front of Petco and having them meet people was the best thing. Other people described that as the absolute worst thing. It made their dog worse. So what I did with all this information is I compiled a list of things that were uniformly beneficial, like having other dogs and being patient. But there's also things that can be done that can either help or actually cause a problem, and those are the kind of things that if you institute them and you see any kind of problem, you got to know from what we've learned here that you got to stop that right away and try other things.
Right.
So there's an overlap on the things that work best and work least, and it is, it seems a little confusing, but if you know that going into it, it's actually pretty easy because you know what to look for and what to hold off on. Like having a training or having a trainer come over worked best for some people, worked horribly for others.
Yeah.
And so as we all know, all these dogs are individuals and they're going to respond to different things that are done.
Right. And that doesn't surprise me at all because that's the case anyway with dogs. I mean, I've said that, you know, I don't even know how many times on the show in talking about training and behavior is how important it is for anybody with a dog that's just wanting to do anything from basic training to behavior modification if they're working with aggression or anxiety or fear or anything like that, is that every dog is different and that what works for one dog isn't necessarily going to work for the next dog and that people really need to find. And if they're going to work with somebody professionally, that to work with somebody who's going to be able to look at every dog as an individual and, you know, develop a program that's going to work best for that dog as an individual and not try to fit every dog into one type of training.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't surprise me at all. And, you know, it's just, it's, you know, interesting that you would say, well, that worked great for, you know, the certain dogs and then... No, that actually could, and it not only not worked, but actually made it worse for other dogs. Yeah,
that's exactly what happened.
Were there any things, did you say any things that made it across the board worse?
Yeah. Two things. One is the opposite of what worked best, meaning that when you push and insist that they're moving ahead out of their comfort zone,
right.
That is always a failure. The other thing on a similar note is anything scolding, discipline, or raised voices is the worst thing to do.
Yeah.
These dogs are just terrified, and if you try to command them into, you know, without using names, certain techniques of domination type
right.
things, it's a horror.
Right.
I mean, it makes their world far more miserable than it already is, and you won't see an advancement. So
yeah.
Those are some of the things that stand out prominently on things that either don't work or cause them to regress.
Yeah. Well, we are going to take a quick break. We're talking, if you're just joining us, with Dr. Frank McMillan, who's with Best Friends Animal Society. Dr. Frank is the lead researcher of a study that was just recently published about the psychological trauma caused to puppy mill breeding dogs. So we're going to talk more with Dr. Frank when we come back from break. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes on Alternative Talk 1150.
Camley Electric Incorporated is a full-service electrical contractor
From simple home repairs to full remodels, new construction, and small commercial projects, our qualified electricians do it all. We pride ourselves on our workmanship and professional standards, delivered with value in mind. Located in historic Ballard, Kemmley Electric serves the greater Seattle metropolitan area. Licensed, bonded, and insured. Kemmley Electric welcomes all inquiries about your electrical needs. Visit the website KemmleyElectric.com. That's K-E-M-L-Y Electric.com.
The Natural Pet Pantry offers everything you need for feeding your pet a raw food diet. Most health issues pets face today are a result of poor diet. The Natural Pet Pantry makes raw, cooked, and custom meals for your pets, all prepared locally using only grade A meats and vegetables. Located in stores around the Puget Sound, the home delivery is available from Stanwood to Gig Harbor. Visit naturalpetpantry.com or call 206-248-1079 for more information on how to add health and longevity to your beloved pet's life. That's naturalpetpantry.com.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick & Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
This is Julie Forbes, your host of the Dog Talk Show. If you've been listening, you already know how I feel about Invisible Fence Northwest and their safety solutions for dogs. But get this, they help cats too. They tell me they've helped thousands of felines enjoy safe freedom outdoors or can keep them safe inside. They also have gentle ways to create a dog-free zone for your cat, so your dog will stay away from your cat's food and litter box. Visit InvisibleFenceNW.com or call 800-800-FENCE and tell them you want the Dog Talk Show discount.
You're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back to the Dog Show with Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150 AM, and we're back talking with Dr. Frank McMillan with Best Friends Animal Society, talking about a study that was recently published that he was the lead researcher for about the psychological trauma that puppy mill survivors show once they are placed in homes. And we're talking about dogs who were the breeding dogs in puppy mills. And a puppy mill, if you're not familiar, is a large commercial operation, oftentimes large scale, and this could be dozens to hundreds to thousands of dogs, depending on the type, where these dogs are basically just kept as breeders, you know, and to mass produce puppies to feed pet stores and to sell online, etc. And the conditions that these dogs are kept in are unacceptable. You know, worst case scenario, Dr. Frank, is that these dogs have only ever walked on wire, that they have to be careful that their paws don't fall through, that they have dirty water, if any at all, that the food, if any at all, is moldy, that they're dirty, they're sick, and they are cramped space-wise, and that they never have any sort of interaction with people. And if they do have interaction, it's not favorable. And they don't have any environmental stimulation. I mean, this is just insane that this goes on in this country. The fact that we even have puppy mills that are USDA approved. If I was the USDA, I'd be embarrassed because I wouldn't want my name. I mean, you know, it's the whole state of everything else. I mean, we could talk about chickens in the same manner. But so, Dr. Frank, you were the lead researcher for a study that measured the psychological trauma that you were able to measure in these questionnaires. You were able to get in touch with over 1,100 people who had adopted these breeding dogs.
Right.
And, you know, so if you've missed any part of this interview, you can find us online. If you go to dogtalkshow.com, this interview will be archived on the website, and it will play from the website itself. You can also download us for free off of iTunes. So we're also a free audio podcast. So if you missed any of this interview, you can catch up then as well. So in talking about puppy mills, it's clear to both you and I, and probably everybody listening to this show, that puppy mills really should not exist at all. But how do we make that happen?
Well, the first thing is the clearest of all, and that is don't buy puppies from pet stores and tell everybody you know the same thing. That, of course, is the demand end, because as long as they're being purchased, basically the money gets sent back to the puppy mill operator with a big thank you and keep it up and fill the spot I just bought this puppy from. And you raised, by the way, a perfect analogy, and that is the laying hens in egg farms. They're basically stuck in cages producing a product that's shipped off to market, and when people buy it, the animals stay in cages. That's exactly what goes on with the puppy mills. So anyway, the pet store option, you just shouldn't buy from pet stores. There's a lot of other alternatives, everything from shelters to breed rescues. If you're looking for a specific breed, there is a breed rescue for every breed. You can get not only good dogs, but dogs whose personality is known, so you'll know whether it's a good fit for you or
right.
not. And then there are private breeders, the ones that breed in very small numbers, one or two breeding females, breeding once a year instead of twice. In their own home, these puppies are raised with intense socialization, so they come out very well-rounded, and their brains are formed for good social interactions. And so that's another avenue if somebody's stuck on purebred. But that's all to minimize the demand. The other things as far as getting reforms and or shutdowns of puppy mills, and by the way, our stance is that the conditions for dogs for breeding should be a good quality of life. If that can be done through some kind of reform, so be it. If it can't be, then the places ought to be shut down.
Mm-hmm.
But the way to do it, of course, is to get active, like you always hear about any other issue. And that is write letters to the editors, write to legislators, pointing out that this is just absolutely unacceptable, that we are torturing dogs to produce the puppies. And as you, Julie, you said yourself, there's so many dogs needing homes and that are being put to death now, it's insane that these numbers literally are, or these dogs are being pumped out by the millions to meet a demand that could be met in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how many puppies are produced every year from puppy mills?
You know, we don't, because there's no statistical accumulation that makes a lot of sense. State by states do it. All we know is there's millions. There are thought to be tens of thousands of puppy mills, but the numbers are really hard to nail down.
Yeah, or how many puppies are sold through pet stores every year?
Well, even, you know, oddly enough, even that's not regulated, because the USDA will only keep count of the ones that cross state lines to be sold. So all the ones that stay in state that are sold either directly out of the puppy mill or even through a pet store don't get counted, and so we can't say, okay, this number of dogs is sold by pet stores across the nation. We just know that it is in the millions, and beyond that we can't really nail it.
You know, I did. Have you heard of Kim Sill? She's the founder of an organization in California called D-Cups Saving Teacups.
I've heard of the group. I haven't heard her name.
Oh, I did an interview with her probably a year ago, something like that. And man, she has got it. She is doing some amazing work, actually getting in and communicating with the pet store owners, bringing them when they're willing, and some of them are, bringing them to shelters and showing them what the current state of affairs is when we're talking about, you know, all of these homeless dogs and dogs that are getting put down and all this sort of thing. And she's actually converted a number of pet stores that used to source from puppy mill type situations. She's
right.
got them now working with shelters.
Wow.
I know.
That is great.
Yeah. Kim Sill for president. That's what I said when we were during that interview. But you can find that interview archived on iTunes and also on our website, which is dogtalkshow.com. You can learn more about Best Friends Animal Society. Their website is bestfriends.org. You can also find them on Facebook. And I have added Best Friends Animal Society to our Facebook fan page. So if you search for The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, you'll find our fan page. And I have just, we're in the process, or we've just sort of been going through the process of slightly changing the show's name. Was formerly The Dog Talk Show, is now The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. I am unable to just change the name of the show on Facebook, so I have started a new page. And so if you are a fan on Facebook, be sure to like The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, because The Dog Talk Show fan page will be going away, and we would hate to lose you. So stay with the pack and like us on Facebook, but you have to go to the new page and click the like button that's actually on that page to become a fan of the new page, and that's The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. And you can find Best Friends Animal Society on Facebook as well. It's under Best Friends Animal Society. Well, Dr. Frank McMillan, I would love to have you back when your results are published for your other study that you did about these puppies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
And thanks so much for the work that you do and the the awareness and education that you're spreading. I think it's one of the most important issues when we're talking about dogs in society is this issue of puppy mills and overpopulation. So thanks so much for the work that you do.
Yeah, thank you for having us on, Julie.
All right. So a quick announcement before we're off the air. Eric, it is time again for the Yappy Holidays Mutt Mixer through City Dog Magazine.
Can't wait.
Yeah, it's tonight.
Oh, right.
From 7 to 9. This year is being held at the Downtown Dog Lounge in Capitol Hill in Seattle. City Dog Magazine's Yappy Holidays Mutt Mixer. You can learn more about it at citydogmagazine.com. And if you do plan to attend, please RSVP at citydogmagazine.com. So we'll be back next Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. every week live, The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. And again, if you missed any part of this show or any of our almost 150 shows, you can find us on iTunes as a free audio podcast. And you can also find all of our shows archived on our website, which is dogtalkshow.com. We have these wonderful car stickers. They're oval. You can see the logo on the website. And if you would like a car sticker, a free car sticker, just email me, host@dogtalkshow.com, with your mailing address wherever you are. I'd be happy to send some out to you. Have a great week, Eric, and we'll see you next Wednesday from 2 to 3 live.
Thanks. Yappy holidays to you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes on Alternative Talk 1150.